Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I am Liz Loza. I'm here with Matt Harmon. Brett Rader is in some sort of corpo training, so we have Sully stepping in. I don't even know your real name. Is it Sean Sullivan?
It's Sean Sullivan. Okay.
I had to email you, and I was like, I don't know what his name is.
Sully at Yahoo Sports.
I should honestly get my name legally changed to Sully at this point.
It throws me off when someone calls you Sean, and there are a few people that do.
A handful of people.
It was like, whomst?
It kind of freaks me out, too, if we're going to be honest. But if somebody just comes guns hot with a Sean, I'm like, whoa, I don't know you from second grade, or you're not my mom, so it's going to be...
Also, we should, if there are at any moment any references to the balls, it's Sully losing his mind.
Yeah, I'll normally be like squirming over here.
I can report from Brett's management training. He's tilted, by the way, because they have to take
give me a moment when he's not.
Well, fair enough. But like
a personality test.
He has to take like a personality test, and he's completely like, he texted me the first day and was like, I feel so seen, or excuse me, slacked me, but he was very concerned about the whole thing.
He was having to be vulnerable.
Yeah. That's part
not
of
a fun
it.
Place.
Yeah, it just
you know
opens
why?
You up.
People the minute you try to be vulnerable. That is exactly what happens. I have learned that too well.
You open yourself
don't
up
do
and
it.
Boom!
Don't do it. Ain't worth
closed.
It. Great little speech at the end of the third season of Stranger Things about how, like, that's where you know the best places. Nope. Lies. They will
cried. So I wept at that part. So I guess
we're
kind of opening
too,
ourselves up right here. The personality test.
Sounds good on TV. Don't do it in real life. All right.
You it know depends on the situation.
Is vulnerable
fine.
What?
It depends on the situation.
I mean, sometimes it works out for real conniving folks, but for anyone who's just trying to be earnest and real, just do that in the safety of your therapist's office. Anyone who, other things that are vulnerable, you know who else is vulnerable? Maybe the San Francisco 49ers rushing attack, because they have got some issues up front. We know Joe Staley's been out. Now the team will be without their right tackle and their fullback. Say his name for me.
Kyle
Juszczyk.
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 It's I mean, Booger said it 100 times on the Monday Night Football broadcast. Jeez, you'd think like the 49ers lost their, you know, lost like the league MVP based on the way Booger was talking about him. It was one of those things that, not to go off on a tangent here, but it's one of those things where like sometimes you hear these commentators, especially the bad ones, which I think Booger certainly falls under.
I don't think he's bad. I think he's wonderful. And I really like his agent, who's wonderful. And he is greatly represented. And Booger deserves all of the money that he is earning.
Fair enough. Then I'll just continue this part of the podcast. I don't think Booger's great at the gig. I think that he definitely hammers home the run game point a lot.
Sure.
Also, sometimes you hear like these guys get hooked on one player and it's like, oh man, they really prepped like for this point, but they keep making it over and over again. Like, it's certainly insightful
like
to say.
Trent Dilfer.
Yeah. Like, it's certainly insightful to say, hey, Kyle Juszczyk is a really underrated and important part of this run game. And like, if you had said that three times maybe during the broadcast, I'd be like, that's a good point. Like, that's true. Cause he's right.
The crowd was like screaming his name.
Yeah. I mean, he is.
And he is there live.
He is there. Great. But it's also like, maybe make that point a few less.
All right.
Times.
Well, when you get that job, you can slam it.
Oh, I would be terrible.
We
job.
Shouldn't. Okay. So Joe Staley's been out since he exited week two with a broken leg, and he's not expected back for another 2 to 4 weeks. Week five last week, Mike McGlinchey went out with a knee injury. He's going to be MIA for like a month or so. Mm-hmm. Juszczyk, that we mentioned, sprained his MCL, also out for an expected 4 to 6 weeks, so another month, let's say. I mean, I have to look at, like, Sony Michel, right? And we see what troubles New England is having running the ball with their O-line issues and without James Devlin, shout out, ever true to the pride and joy of College Hill. They're awesome, a fullback. So now, what do we do with this backfield that, like, lit it up? Matt Breida is probably one of the, like, hottest running backs right now because of that. I mean, he set the tone from jump in that game, right? 86, 85-yard touchdown, something like that. And Tevin Coleman looked good, too. What about George Kittle? Because now he's got to block a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they're down both to starting tackles. It's a problem. However, I think the scheme for this run game really is what makes it beyond just, like, the blockers and the personnel. And that's why you saw, like, I think McGlinchey might be their best offensive lineman, and I think he's certainly been a huge boost in the running game, which is why they took him so high in the draft. But at the same time, I thought this was an interesting note I was listening to. Actually, we have Move the Sticks alum Sean Sullivan in the house here.
That is correct.
I was listening to one of their episodes this week, and Daniel Jeremiah from NFL Network made the point, like, more teams have been studying what Kyle Shanahan has been doing in the league as opposed to like what Sean McVay is doing, while the media, you know, hypes up Sean McVay and he,
well, because one of those teams is winning.
Right. And he deserves the hype. And that was DJ's point. Like, even when the 49ers were losing, people in the league were still intently studying Kyle Shanahan the most because of what they do in the run game from a schematic point of view. So it's certainly a loss to take, you know, the right tack out of the equation, to take the fullback out of the equation. And obviously they're still without the left tackle, but I still think that this team can be a really successful rushing group because of the scheme. Also this week too, the Rams are not necessarily one of the greatest run stopping teams in the NFL. So I think that it's still a situation where if you were planning on playing Breida, who is $17 in Yahoo Daily Fantasy, if you're still planning on playing Tevin Coleman, great, go for that too. Breida especially is interesting because he ran more routes than, I mean, actually, Tevin Coleman ran the same amount of routes as you did, Liz, which was zero. And
I'm taking shots at my route running.
I mean, I'm just saying, I didn't see you on Sunday out there running any routes. I saw you chatting with me. I mean, I didn't run any routes either. Point being here, Juice Check and Breida are running routes out of the backfield, and I think that makes Matt Breida the more interesting back of the two of them.
Sure, but I think this collective backfield. So let's play a little either or then, right?
Let's.
Matt Breida at the Rams.
Yep.
Or Carlos Hyde at Kansas City.
Ooh, I'm going to go with Breida because of pass catching. Like, I think
one has upside too. I mean, he has upside that
he
I
has.
Think
yeah.
Hyde does.
I want to play Hyde this week though. That too, and so that's a good. I did Fearless Forecast for running backs, and I was, you know, obviously we know that the Chiefs just got barreled over by the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday night last week, but and this should be a high scoring game. Should be competitive back and forth. That keeps Hyde in the game script. It's really the type of place you want to use Carlos Hyde. But at the same time, I think the pass catching, the upside of the scheme, I think goes towards Matt Breida's favor.
One more. Philip Lindsay versus Tennessee.
Oh, jeez.
Or Matt Breida.
Matt Breida. I don't want to play. I know Philip Lindsay.
He's looked good over the past 2 weeks.
Looked good last couple weeks. I know he's played well. He's been productive too, which I think he always looks good. Whether the production's going to be there. The problem,
you want to be attached to the better offense.
I want to be attached to the better offense, which I still think is San Francisco. The good news for Philip Lindsay though is he has developed a pretty good pass catching floor. I think he has 4 catches in all
but Freeman
all but
is
one
seeing
game.
Catches as well. I mean,
yeah, I know the both of them. Yeah. I mean, well, when you got a quarterback who doesn't want to throw 15 yards down the field, you're going to get those little popgun passes to the running back.
So what about, we both agree that Coleman, okay. So, and also we should say that for reference, those of us who do rank have ranked Matt Breida as the RB22 consensus overall for the week. But Matt Coleman is not far, I'm sorry, Tim Coleman, Tevin, how about I say his name right? Tevin Coleman is not far behind at the consensus RB28. That's actually exactly where I have him ranked. So, Adrian Peterson, who we're going to probably talk about at some point, or Tevin Coleman.
Tevin Coleman. Don't mess around with a Washington back if you don't have to.
Ronald Jones versus your on-again, off-again Carolina Panthers or Tevin Coleman against my on-again, off-again Rams?
That's a good question, but I think I'd still go Tevin Coleman. Jones, I think I talked about it on last week's podcast, just has no pass catching floor. He did double his target total on the season last week from 3 to 6. So
yeah, but he also like shared that backfield with Peyton Barber. It was not completely his, and no one was talking about that, even if he looked good.
I was mostly just joking. I still think he's not that
appealing.
Sorry,
I'm still a little bit choked by the whole thing.
It's earlier than we usually tape, you know? I still got a coffee in hand.
I mean, I'm sensitive to the Ronald Jones situation is what I'm trying to say.
I got you.
All right. So let's move on then. Another piece of news, one that I'm sure you will love, Sammy Watkins. You love talking about Sammy Watkins. Your favorite thing to do.
My favorite player.
So he's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He went into week 5 with a shoulder injury, and he left it with a hamstring injury because how about a twofer? That's the Sammy coaster. But to
me, this is the Sammy Watkins experience.
Yeah. But to me, like, the hamstring is much more concerning than the shoulder because I don't like the soft tissue stuff. Plus, like, dude's leg and feet have been messed up forever. So that's just compounding a bodily area of concern that makes me a little bit even more concerned. He didn't practice on Wednesday. Even if he starts versus the Texans, there's no guarantee, I think, that he's going to finish. But the reason this news is particularly interesting is because it's coming at the same time that Tyreek Hill did practice. And it was, yes, a limited capacity on Wednesday, but Ian Rappaport is intimating that Hill is likely to be GTG for Sunday's game. Mm-hmm. So how are you planning things? Because obviously, of course, everyone wants a piece of this Texans-Kansas City matchup. It's the highest projected point total per Vegas, around 54, I think the line opened at. It's probably going to move up more if Hill is officially good to go. And then we got to talk about this, like, Byron Pringle situation. He's 10% owned. Second-year player, played 78% of the team snaps ahead of Hardman. And he's was second in team targets with 8 looks in week 5 versus Indianapolis. That was, by the way, behind Kelsey, yep, but ahead of McColl.
Yeah, third on the team in routes run, too, behind Robinson and Travis Kelsey.
So posted a 6-1-0-3-1 stat line.
Yeah, he looked pretty good doing it. I mean,
anybody looks good in this offense. This is about DeMarcus Robinson a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, this is the beauty of playing with Patrick Mahomes. I think the question really is with Mahomes too, because he's
not
certainly not 100%, you know, gets jammed up, the ankle stepped on by another, what do they call that?
Friendly fire.
Oh, how intriguing. And I think if he's taken down from like the greatest quarterback to ever play the game to like, well, the fifth best quarterback in the league or something, if he can't use the mobility, I mean, that's problematic for all of these like ancillary receivers, but especially against the Texans defense, their strength is obviously in the pass rushing department. So are we really thinking that we want to invest in this far down the depth chart receivers if with a 80% Patrick Mahomes rather than 100% Patrick Mahomes? I mean,
80% I don't know. Patrick Mahomes is still like,
it's better than a lot of other. Yeah. That's what I said. He like goes from being, this has been a common theme throughout a lot of the like podcasts I listen to, people will say like, oh yeah, Mahomes, he goes from being like the greatest quarterback in the league to maybe the fifth, sixth best quarterback in the league without the mobility. But that makes sense because you're taking, like, obviously we all know Mahomes, like, great, he's a pocket passer, he can completely slice you to pieces as a pocket passer, but what takes him to that, why I call him quarterback god, is because he can move around too, he can do all of the things.
So you're saying that if you've got JJ Watt, right, and he's finally gotten going, right, and the pass rush is strong, if Patrick Mahomes isn't mobile enough to beat the pass rush, then he's not going to be able to take advantage of a secondary that certainly has issues? I mean, I think, are you that worried about his mobility?
No, I think it just takes the ceiling off the offense a little bit. Like, again, this goes from an offense that the answer was against the Ravens, for example, you know, play all the Chiefs. Like, do we play Mecole Hardman? Do we play DeMarcus Robinson? The answer is both.
All of them.
Along with, I mean, Sammy Watkins doing dust out there, but like, nevertheless, you still play Sammy Watkins, you play Travis Kelce, then you play these two, the two and the three in the all offense, right, too.
But like, if Sammy Watkins is out and Tyreek Hill is starting, I mean, he's starting back, like, let's say he's semi-limited, right? The same thing as Mahomes,
yeah,
right? Like,
yeah, yeah.
He's downgraded by like 5 wide receivers, right? He's not your wide receiver 3 heading into the week. He's your wide receiver 8 heading into the week, whatever. So now, what about the other pieces? Because you know, if you have Tyreek Hill and you've been stashing him, you're going to start him. So how would you rank the other players between Robinson, Pringle, and McColl? And also, just a quick note on Byron Pringle, because I did do a little bit of research on him. Undrafted free agent, 4.46 speed. He went to Kansas State like your boy, Tyler Lockett.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he used to be my boy, too, until you were louder about it.
Doesn't matter who's first, matters who's loudest.
Yes, you and Brad Evans, same school. but he was talked up over the preseason, and he almost had a role on the team last year, but an injury kept him out. So this isn't someone who's unfamiliar with the playbook. This isn't someone that the coaching staff is, you know, just throwing out there out of necessity. There is, what are you doing? Here's my thought. And then you tell me. I think of those, I would downgrade McColl Hardman the most.
Yeah, I mean, it's concerning that he ran fewer routes than both of those guys last week.
And he was kind of the Tyreek Hill replacement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go Hill, Robinson, Pringle.
Yeah. I think it's tough. Like, I just think it's a total dart throw no matter what. And it's almost kind of like, what do you need? Because Pringle's the total wild card here to me, because he could just be nothing like this week. I think there's a strong chance that if Hill's back, he's just not a factor because he wasn't a factor prior to Sunday night. So he's the most volatile to me. Like I could see him being a ceiling or a floor player, whereas I think Robinson is probably the most likely to get the opportunity. You know, he's playing more snaps, he's running more routes. So he would be the guy that has the safest floor.
Sure.
If you're looking for just the straight ceiling, I still think that's Hardman because he was playing a little bit before Hill's injury. He was playing a little bit before, but not to the extent that he obviously has been the last few weeks. And he's the one who could be a straight zero spot, or he could be the highest of the three guys. So he has the widest range, whereas Pringle, I just don't even know if he's going to get the opportunity.
So we have no answers for you.
No, we have no. I think the answer there is, if you need like more of a floor play, then I think Robinson is the safest.
Sure,
bet.
I think we both agree. I had him number two behind Hill. So yes. Before this conversation makes me cry anymore, let me talk about what made me cry a couple of days ago. Learning that Chris Herndon, while he was running routes on his own, strained his hamstring. Now word has been received that
we've received a raven.
That this isn't a terrible injury. It should only be a week or so, but still hammies. Ew.
Yeah.
And also, how much longer do we have to wait? And also, the Jets are basically the Chargers East.
Ugh, well.
At this point. So much so that I did a little work on their behalf. And I found a little shop that has sage and crystals and intuitive readings.
All right.
Called Mystic World.
Out there in the New Jersey area?
It's less than 5 miles from MetLife Stadium.
Very nice.
9-minute drive per Google Maps from the facility. Gregory Kay had this to say about Mystic World in Lindenhurst, New Jersey. I love this place. Been going here for a few years from time to time when in the area visiting family or friends. I always pick up some sage. You need that, guys. And find other things that lead me to them as needed. Y'all need a lot. Everyone is always super friendly and the energy is always positive and light, which is exactly what, I mean, Adam Gase needs some Reiki.
I was just going to say, do you think there's a human being less likely to participate in any of these activities than Adam Gase?
I mean, here's what's happening.
Abundance
grows from where energy flows, Matt.
I agree. But I'm just saying, I don't know that you're going to find a willing participant. Let me tell you who's never drinking a damn Trilogy kombucha.
Are you making fun of my drink?
No, I mean, I got plenty at home. But point being here, I don't think Adam Gase is your guy on this one.
Well, he can continue then to get fired.
And the next coach can. Maybe hit up the next coach and be like, just a thought.
Y'all need to sage it.
Maybe
clear
sage
it,
that facility down. Needs a good smudging.
Put a couple clear quartz in your pockets because we are getting desperate now.
Instead of you know, going out there with the smelling salt before the game, maybe rub a few in your hands.
A little essential oil.
Yeah, a little essential oils.
Deep ujjayi breath and get through your business.
Maybe some peppermint, lemongrass.
Now you're
what do
just
you want?
Completely trolling me because that's what I put on the bed. Is that what you're...
No.
Anyway. <I'm not. laughs> The only bit of good news, the positivity and light, is that Sam Darnold will be back for this game, which also means that the Jamison Crowder experience without Chris Herndon there continues to exist.
Not in my world.
He did have his lone red zone target, Jamison Crowder did, in week one when Sam was under center.
Do you give any credit to the fact that I don't think Sam Darnold looked that great in week one, and obviously the statistics
Jamison
would...
Jamison Crowder had 17 targets in that game.
Yeah, that's what I mean by not looking great. Like, you're making that decision 17 times. Like you said, learn from your mistakes, bro. Come on.
Well, Demaryius Thomas wasn't active. Your Demaryius Thomas wasn't active in that game.
Don't put that on me. I almost picked him up on waivers.
What is wrong with you?
He's playing like all the snaps. Okay. But do you give any credence to the idea that Sam Darnold was already suffering through mono in week one and that's why he wasn't like looking that good?
Like on the heels of City Boy Summer.
Yeah. And he was like, well, that's what people are saying, that he already was suffering, not like full on whatever, but like that's why he's getting rid of the ball so fast.
Do you know anyone who has mono who's ever had mono?
Mm-mm.
No, me either.
Every football writer wanted to tell you about the time like that they had the kissing disease because like I kissed a girl one time. Can you believe it?
I mean, like that was
a good point. Everybody definitely was
everyone had
the damn
a
mono
story.
It's so stupid.
I had a college experience and kissed a lot of different humans and never went away. Like maybe I got a sore throat a couple of times, but not mono.
Yeah, no,
right?
Yeah, no, same. I mean, ditto. My college experience wasn't that great, but like, because so a decent amount of people.
What do we do for these people who have been holding on to Chris Herndon? Do you have any week six streams that you could throw out, Matt Harmon?
Well, a lot of people, the question that I got a lot this week was, who do you think has more season long? Who would you rather have in season long? Not for week six, but like the rest of the season. Chris Herndon.
Yeah, he's going to be back.
Chris Herndon or Gerald Everett. And I think so. If you're looking, if Gerald Everett didn't get picked up in your league, then I think you look. The question became a lot more difficult because I agree with you. I was like, it's Herndon because I think he has a better shot to command a more hulking presence in that target distribution rather than what Everett does. So
splitting with Tyler Higbee. But also, so Todd Gurley's got this thigh bruise that apparently completely blindsided Sean McVay, or so McVay said to the press. If that continues to be a real thing, then we're relying on some sort of combination of Malcolm Brown. Malcolm Brown. I almost said Malcolm Floyd.
There's a lot of Malcolms.
Malcolm Floyd. Malcolm Brown and the rookie.
Daryl Henderson. Sean McVay said there might come a time where we need to, you know, unleash Daryl Henderson. Perhaps it is this week. Perhaps.
Oh, great. I just dropped him like a minute before the thigh bruise news came.
All your best ball teams will be grateful.
But the point is, if the backfield changes from a Gurley's backfield to this combination of Brown and Henderson, then I do think Gerald Everett ends up having more red zone potential or exposure.
I think that's certainly possible. And I mean, he's been clearly dusting Tyler Higbee in terms of routes run over the last 2 weeks. So it looks like he has a more commanding presence in that offense. I
would still lean Herndon's way, assuming health, but I think you're right that,
you
know,
it's tough because like, when are we going to get peak Chris Herndon? Week 8?
Maybe.
Week 8? And then like, okay.
That's only halfway through the season.
Yeah. But then it's like, okay. And then you have the target leader for the Jets.
There's no Quincy Enunwa though. I mean, like, they need somebody who's going to be a red zone threat. Get out of here. Other than Le'Veon Bell, there needs to be someone advancing the ball.
I actually want to talk about Le'Veon Bell because he's been, I tweeted this week, just how uninspiring he has been so far this year, and I would say uninspiring is being kind.
Mm-hmm.
He's averaging 2.9 yards per carry, 6.1 yards per catch, the second lowest in the league, or second lowest in his career, and he hasn't found the end zone since week one. However, he's getting a decent amount of passing volume.
He's also had Luke Falk under center.
So do you think he's like, do you really think he's a buy low guy too? Because they also have such a horrible offensive line. I don't know that Sam Darnold's return takes this offense from 32nd to like 12th. I think he might take them 32nd to 26th.
That's fair, but you can't use the offensive line argument now. That was the argument to have,
but it's getting
in the
worse.
Preseason.
Big Kelechi Osemele is
their
injured.
Only positive acquisition.
Yeah. Also, Ryan Khalil has been a mess. There's like a reason the Panthers didn't want him back.
That's not news. I would still say, I mean, look at the position. Would you rather have James Conner?
No.
Right.
Conner's been even worse. Conner hasn't cleared 60 yards rushing all
would
year.
Would you rather have, I mean, I think you would, but Todd Gurley's another player, right?
I don't know. Like, yeah, Gurley's problematic
so
too.
So if you are looking to buy for a stud running back, like here's what we know. We know that talent can be a tiebreaker. We know that he's talented. We know he's going to see a lot of looks in the passing game. So
I think he's looked pretty good,
and
too.
And I think that Sam Darnold is a good quarterback, and me it's going to take him a little bit to shake off some rust. So I do think Le'Veon Bell's a good buy low, but I also think that that's the narrative right now, and so people aren't actually going to be able to buy low on him.
Well, I don't know. This is a larger discussion point, but like that's the narrative among like the people who
are tweeting about this
tweeting about this nonsense. Which, if you pay attention to Twitter, you're not really getting a good microcosm of not just football fans,
the world,
fantasy people, or the world at large. The Twitter is just a void that we all scream in all day.
Another running back that you would definitely like to have that James Roday is mad at me that we do not have is Christian McCaffrey.
He is upset.
He's. I've gotten many, many texts. And you met him. That's right. So what is this thing about? So let me first say he left in the fourth quarter of the Panthers' 7-point victory over the Jags with cramps.
Mm-hmm.
I thought maybe he just needed like a banana and some Powerade and he'd be fit. But no, indeed, it looks like he's got a back issue. Now, you have a saying, some country-ass backwards saying about backs that I cannot figure out.
Ain't nobody used to have a bad back. Once you have a bad back, you have a bad back.
You added the second half for clarity. It's just the first half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's...
Do it again.
Ain't nobody used to have a bad back. By the way, I did that on my pickups video this week. So I talked about Chase Edmonds, David Johnson's backup, and an actual chiropractor reposted it on Instagram and said, like, this is, and I, he like made fun. He was like,
accurate.
He was laughing at, like, he was laughing along with it. And then I replied to him. I said, okay, but is this like really, is this a really like bad medical thing to say? He's like, no, that's pretty true.
Ain't nobody used to have a bad back. Because they got a bad back. Okay.
Once you got a bad back, you got a bad back.
So it's concerning that CMC maybe has, for the moment, a bad back, I guess, forever now. He didn't practice on Wednesday. But listen, he's got to fly to London. He's got to get on a flight to London.
Well, he's there. They're there.
Sure.
He's
Panthers. Take on the Bucks. He's also been touching the ball 30 damn times per game. Oh, I'm sorry. 27.2 times per game.
Leads the NFL in touches.
It's not even Halloween.
Yeah. What? What do you want from me here?
CMC's usage is like seeing Christmas decorations up at the Home Depot in September. Too soon.
They can't have Kyle Allen like dropping back and passing the ball 45 times a game. So what are you going to do there?
I don't know. Maybe you have this Reggie Bonifon.
Yeah, I think.
Right? And maybe you let him have some touches because.
Yeah, Bonifan.
Bonifan. Well, do you know much about this fellow?
I know he's a converted quarterback.
And converted wide receiver.
He's done everything. He's a do-it-all guy.
That's versatility. He can catch, right? Converted quarterback out of Louisville, went undrafted. He actually moved to wide receiver after Lamar Jackson joined the team in 2016. And then Lamar moved
to wide receiver. Suck it, haters.
Yes. That's a great point. And then he moved to running back in 2017. While he was at Louisville, he carried the ball 93 times, rushing for 459 yards and 7 touchdowns. He also saw a career-high 21 passes and added another touchdown as a receiver. He's 6 foot one, 213 pounds, ran a 4.5 40 at Louisville's pro day, 38-inch vertical jump, 20 bench press reps. He's owned in 8% of leagues, and he most importantly beat (an exhausted Miles Jack on a 59-yard run and scored in the final moments of last Sunday's game versus the Jags. Now you love
me
being the wolf. Right? Like this whole, like, last year, nobody talked about being a wolf and having that thing until week 10. But go be a wolf.
That is
not
what
I said. Don't be a timid little ba-ba black sheep.
Agree. I said all those things except the last year part.
Uh-huh. So that's fine. One less thing for me to do.
You're welcome.
So as the leader of the wolf pack.
As the wolf.
Oh, that's awful. anyway, so do you advocate picking up this Bonifon character?
I think if you have space, sure. I do wonder.
Clutch answer.
Like, the Panthers have had just no inclination to use their backup running back beyond Christian McCaffrey, and it's tough. Like, it's tough to take the guy off the field because he does everything. He does it so well. He's like getting better each and every week.
Team also has a proclivity for using their stars so much until they break down.
Fair point. Like, there's like the one Patrick meme from SpongeBob where he's like rubbing his hands menacingly. I saw someone from Panthers Twitter putting like Ron Rivera looking at Christian McCaffrey after running Cam Newton into the ground or whatever, like, oh, this one's next. I thought that was pretty funny. But also it's worth noting for Bonifan, like, he won what was a competitive like backup running back gig because last year they had CJ Anderson, which is hilarious that like they had CJ Anderson
and
didn't use him for. And then he comes out and is a playoff hero for the Rams. And, like, this was a conversation even last year, like, amongst the dregs of Panthers Twitter, which I still have a decent amount of attachment to. Like, why are they not using, like, they're kind of overusing McCaffrey. Like, this has been a talking point for a while. McCaffrey's done nothing to not earn more touches. He's never been injured up until now, really. So it was going into this year, like, okay, they're going to kind of throw Bonifan, Jordan Scarlett, who they drafted out of Florida, some of the other undrafted players, Elijah Holyfield, the former Georgia running back. They really were just going to throw all these guys at the wall and see what stuck. And it looks like Bonifan is the guy who's stuck. So, yeah, it's definitely worth picking up. This week's matchup, however, is not really all that inspiring because the only team that slowed Christian McCaffrey this year is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they played in week two, held him to 53 total yards, and pretty much no one else has come close to holding McCaffrey down like that. And Tampa Bay has a legitimately great run defense. I think they're allowing the fewest yards per carry in the league, and they're the number one ranked rushing defense by DVOA. So tough spot for both of these backs this week.
But for well, you're not going to sit Christian McCaffrey.
No, of course you're not. But I'm just saying, like, if there was a week to maybe mix it up a little bit, maybe we see what Bonafan can do just because he's a little more fresh.
So of the, like, of the backups to the studs, right? Tony Pollard, Bonafan, Latavius Murray. But I think Latavius Murray is on most leagues. He's drafted already.
Oh, I don't know. He probably got hate dropped.
Maybe. And Madison. Who is the biggest priority?
So between Pollard, Bonafan, and Madison.
And Murray. Let's throw him in.
And Murray. I think.
And Armstead. Let's see, Fournette's backup. Because, I mean, we're talking
about. What about Chase Edmonds?
Well.
He might start this week because David Johnson has a bad back.
I'm leaving him out of the conversation because he's been already picked up. Yeah. That's a pretty clear situation.
Bad back. You know what they say about bad backs.
You ain't never not had a bad back?
Nope, that's not what they said. I think Tony Pollard is. I think it goes Madison, Pollard, Gap, Bonafan, Murray, Armstead.
I agree. Armstead's last.
Armstead
and
is
Pollard
last.
Pollard is first.
By the way, Leonard Fournette, in terms of like workhorse guys, he's seeing unbelievable volume. Like number one in routes run, only McCaffrey has more touches, and Leonard Fournette has 95 carries to 10 for frickin' Armstead. So like there's just as much of a situation going on in Jacksonville as what's going on in Carolina in terms of usage.
Yeah, but one of them is much more explosive than the other.
And one of them is much better than the other and got drafted behind the other, but suck it.
Well, the Carolina Panthers clearly are trying not to tank by giving CMC so much work and not just throwing up their hands once Cam Newton goes down. The Miami Dolphins, on the other hand, are actively trying to tank. And they're actually in a bit of a predicament this week when they're facing Washington, because this is a, dare I say, must-lose game for them?
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Like, it's weird.
The team that's trying to tank is facing off against the team that is accidentally tanking. Well, one of the two, because the Bengals are kind of up there as well.
But, you know, maybe the Dolphins aren't really trying to tank as much as we think they may be, because they did end up benching Kalen Ballage, which would certainly help them tank. Yeah. And in fact, you know, Ballage is garbage and Mark Walton has been promoted. Kalen Ballage is like, I love this. This is not even a stat. This is just a fact. 10 targets, 3 receptions, 3 drops. Enough said.
Yeah. That was of all the tanking things they've done, like continuing to try for 4 weeks to get Ballage going was perhaps the most tanking thing they did.
But they're still like, no, we can't even. It's too obvious.
Yeah.
We can't do
too
this.
Disingenuous. We can say we're trying to win games, but we can't actually say that if we keep rolling this guy out here.
So enter Mark Walton, who ironically is from the same draft class as Ballage, 2018, but he was drafted by Cincinnati in the 4th round.
Out of Miami.
I was going to say he's going home to Miami.
Homecoming extraordinaire.
How much Mark Walton tape have you watched? I have limited viewing experience, but
I'll go with limited as well.
Okay. I mean, I did watch a little bit last night to prep.
He's a
shifty guy.
I rewatched most of the games, and I did rewatch because for whatever reason did watch that last Dolphins game. And yeah, I mean, he popped a little bit. He certainly
got some good bursts. He's got decent enough hands.
He was
better than Ballage's.
Sure enough. He was kind of a nightmare though in Cincinnati, which is why he's here. Because he was a decent. What round was he drafted in again?
Fourth.
So, I mean, yeah, he was a 4th round pick that essentially just got shown the door real quick.
Well, he's also undersized. And I think working behind that offensive line, like the lack of size is gonna crush you. And he has a surgically repaired ankle.
Yep. So, I think there was a decent amount of thought that like, okay, maybe he could be like a Gio Bernard replacement in a couple of years. And I mean, that obviously didn't work out because he's been cut and Bernard was given a new contract. For whatever reason, to do nothing.
So we're mentioning the Mark Walton promotion because it means Kalen Ballage has been demoted. But more importantly, it means that Kenyon Drake is going to be the starter. So don't go out and chase Mark Walton, although, listen, 2% of leagues have already gone and done that. good on you if you're looking for the backup to Kenyon Drake.
No stone unturned. But I mean, will Kenyon Drake definitely be the man, you know, because like they obviously didn't want to use Ken. No one has wanted to use Kenyon Drake as a full time back.
Except for that one month.
Except for one month that Adam Gase did it. Right? To great results, too, by the way. But I mean, he never wanted to do it again. So far, this Brian Flores regime has not wanted to do it either.
Well, the reason that Drake, I think, has some, I don't want to say upside. The reason he's relevant, let's say, is because he does see a decent amount of targets in the passing game.
Yeah. Sure. I think he
could. His carries are, I mean, he's averaging double-digit carries, but he is not guaranteed double-digit carries.
I gave him for Fearless Forecast this week, even against Washington, 76 total yards, 5 catches.
Oh, so, you're real bullish, huh?
No.
That's sarcasm.
No, I'm not.
So you're just fading anyone here?
Yeah, like, what? There's a chance this game is just 6-0, you know? Like,
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true with Devontae Parker doing stuff. It's not like the Washington secondary is particularly good. Sure, I think Devontae Parker is probably going to draw Josh Norman. Josh Norman hasn't been good. He has the bigger brand name, and that's why I'm making the assumption on matchup. Preston Williams, I like. He is good. And as much as this team is wanting to tank, I do think they get enough done via the air to give Kenyon Drake, at least in this matchup, like 12 carries.
You know my actual take on this game? I think Washington wins handedly.
Matt, why?
Because they have the way, like, when you look at every unit that's on the field, the biggest mismatch, I think, is between Washington's defensive front and Miami's offensive front. Miami's offensive front, we know.
Can we just stop talking about this? The Tank Bowl, please.
Yo, I didn't even want to talk about the Tank Bowl, but
we've spent like
6 minutes
on the Tank Bowl.
She's got me talking about.
Can we not talk about the biggest mismatch of the Tank Bowl?
The biggest mismatch of the Tank Bowl is Washington's defensive front versus Miami's offensive front.
People are going to be targeting this game because every Adrian Peterson owner who has yet to drop him, y'all better start AP now because this is your opportunity. So
I'm sure people are definitely targeting it, but we've talked about it.
And also, didn't we want to talk about him for your guy, Preston Williams?
Yeah, Preston Williams. Yes, we did.
Go ahead.
True. Preston Williams, former Vol, cannot stand Butch Jones. Another long list of guys. Hey, Rashawn Golden making plays. Like the list is long and distinguished, obviously, AK. But anyway, that was my 30-second rant.
All I'm saying is that the Ballage move at least positively affects Kenyon Drake. And Kenyon Drake, with the volatility at the running back position that we have already discussed, is now an RB3 or flex. And it's not a great position to be in. And he is a starting running back on a crappy team, yes. But sometimes, would you rather have Ito Smith or Kenyon Drake?
Oh, Kenyon Drake.
Okay, so, but people are asking Ito Smith questions. Would you rather have Peyton Barber or Kenyon Drake?
Kenyon Drake.
Okay, so there is validity to discussing Kenyon Drake because there are a lot of people who own him and have like, Duke Johnson or Kenyon. Like,
Duke Johnson's never the answer.
Not even against Kansas City. I'd still take Kenyon Drake even in this matchup for Duke Johnson.
Okay.
So, y'all can suck it. Mama did her homework. Let's move on.
I mean,
what matchup do you want to talk about, Matt? Let's make this all about you. What matchup are you
interested in? Not asking for that, Liz.
I don't like your tone.
Well, I didn't like your tone. So now we're even. I think in terms of the games that I want to talk about, the London Bowl. We've talked a lot about Christian McCaffrey and all these goofballs in the backfield there for Carolina. But I am interested in especially this Tampa Bay defense, because through the first, you know, couple weeks of the season, it looked like Tampa Bay was going to be like San Francisco, you know, among the most transformed units in the NFL, right?
Yes.
Yes. So far, though, the last couple of weeks has not looked that way. I think this is a good test for them because the Panthers offense is, I think Kyle Allen is starting to show some cracks in the armor.
That's what got him in trouble in college.
Yeah, especially fumbles. That's been a big problem. Also, just like, I think he's been a caretaker. I think he's been exactly what you want a backup quarterback to be. But I think any talk now looks like, in terms of him taking over for the starting job, looks ridiculous. You know, that looks silly. He just doesn't add anything to the offense. Like, he can make the throws, whatever. But the secondary in Tampa Bay has started to look really problematic. I think that could be a nice little you know, rebound effort for guys like Curtis Samuel, DJ Moore, those players, Greg Olsen. I think they've been getting killed by tight ends. So I think you start your Panthers in this spot. And I'm just really interested in terms of this defense, like, can they continue to play above their heads? Because they've looked much more like the first 2 weeks of the season, it was like Todd Bowles, holy hell. Mm-hmm. One of the best coaching jobs in the league, turning this unit around. And then like the last 2 weeks, it's looked more like, oh, this is the Bucs defense we expected. So what's the answer here? Is it one of those two extremes or is it somewhere in the middle?
Well, I think Shaq Barrett has cooled off a little bit.
To be expected.
I mean, yeah.
You can't keep up like a 4-sack-per-game pace forever.
But that, to me, the pressure on Kyle Allen is going to be the answer to the game.
Mm, yeah. And especially what's the health of some of these offensive linemen in Carolina. That's another thing to monitor.
You have a Greg Little take this week. You seem to always have a little Greg Little on your mind.
I mean, they just can't. Greg they just they have a little Greg Little on the mind. They just can't have Daryl Williams out there at left tackle. That's like a stone nightmare. So that's
love that you mentioned. I love that you mentioned Greg Olsen because, you know, he hasn't done anything. I think he's had like 2 yards over the or 2 balls for 5 yards total over the last 2 weeks because he put up a goose egg last week. But he did face off against the Bucs, as you mentioned, in week 2, and he put up over 100 yards on them then. I don't think he finds the end zone in this one, but I do have him projected for 5 and 64.
That makes sense. That's a good, I think that's a good solid projection for him.
So it's something like he's one of those low end tight end options. Well, I was going to talk about Washington at Miami, but since our substitute producer said not to do that.
Do you want to talk about San Francisco at LA?
I mean, if you do, I was going to talk about the Houston Kansas City game.
Oh, let's talk about that because I feel like we've spent less time on that one.
I find this matchup particularly interesting because I think all of us were a little shook to see Kansas City lose at home to Indianapolis. And it should be noted, Brissett didn't throw a touchdown. Marlon Mack, like the Colts, Frank Wright's a freaking genius, but the Colts won that game. Yes, there are a bunch of injuries. Chris Jones, Pat Mahomes, who we've already talked about, Sammy Watkins. Yes, there are a bunch of injuries, but the Colts were able to win this game by playing keep away, right? Yeah. The time of possession was 15 minutes higher, over 15 minutes higher than Kansas City's. The Texans are not going to be able to follow that blueprint. It is impossible given their offensive line. So they are going to have to go toe for toe or ankle for ankle with Patrick Mahomes in this one. And I am really hoping that maybe this, even if it wasn't last year, I thought last week was the get right spot for DeAndre Hopkins. But now I'm hoping that it's got to be this week.
This is the week. One of the weeks it will be the weeks. But yeah, it's real good chance that this could actually be the week. And yeah, this is obviously it's one of the most appealing games on the slate. And I think it just comes down to where is Mahomes health wise? Because like if we're talking about Mahomes is the fifth or sixth best quarterback in the NFL without his mobility is instead of being, you know, QB God. God is immortal here. Is Deshaun Watson, is he better than that? You know, like, is he the second best quarterback in the league right now? I mean, he's playing pretty unbelievable.
We know he's mobile.
Yeah, we know he's mobile. The Chiefs defense, too, like.
Without Chris Jones, I mean, I'm going to give advantage to Watson here.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we've seen what he can do, like, even last week against the disgusting Falcons, who I barely want to acknowledge exist. There was a couple of plays where he really got out of pressure situations because he can still do that. You know, that's the thing. Like, he definitely creates some sack situations for himself because of how he plays. Same way with Russell Wilson. It just is what it is with these guys. But he also can, you know, get out of those situations too. And I think that if he doesn't have to do any of that, yeah, he could just sit back in a clean pocket and really take it to this team.
Who would you rank first?
Mahomes or Watson?
Yep.
This game's in Arrowhead.
Yep, it's at Arrowhead.
I think I would probably rank Watson just a little higher because of the health.
Yeah, I ranked him number one and Mahomes number two on the week. Obviously, for DFS and for every opportunity, like, this is the matchup that you want to take advantage of. We already talked about the secondaries, the secondary in Houston. Great call on Fuller, by the way. Take a victory lap. That was fantastic. Do you think he follows it up? Not to the same extent, but
I think he's a guy you play. Like, I think he's a guy. He was a guy I was playing every week because I drafted him on so many damn teams. But like, This is the possible outcome that you know you're leaving on your bench if you don't play him, especially in a good matchup last week. Obviously a good matchup. This one, a good matchup. The volume was always there, you know, in terms of air yards and stuff. So, yeah, if you're going to – I think you have to play him. I would expect
– Top 20.
I would expect him to be a wide receiver two the rest of the way. Like, he already jumped from, like, sub 50-something to, like, wide receiver 8 on the season or something crazy like that because of what he did last week. So, you know, the production is going to be a little more balanced out the rest of the way, I think.
Should we talk some DFS?
Let us. You already talked a little DFS.
That was a tease.
Right into it, you know?
All right.
Okay.
Who's your bargain?
I got two bargains this week.
I got double.
Number one, Christian Kirk.
Not worried about that ankle.
I think he's going to play.
Ain't a thing.
Also, he's going to play against the Falcons. I mean, enough said. Like what? Like, do I have to? The Falcons are the worst defense that I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yep.
That's not actually true, but they are pretty abhorrent.
And he's only $15.
He's only $15. The injury discount. Like, everyone wants to play Kyler Murray this week. I think he's in almost everybody's daily fantasy lineup. Everyone wants to play Kyler Murray. Well,
because he's only $26.
Yeah, he's cheap. Ball's gonna have to go somewhere. I think it could go to Christian Kirk. And because he's discounted because of the injury, he also hadn't had great production since week two. But despite that, the volume of snaps, targets, air yards, pretty much
coming off his first win too.
Yeah. So I think I'm in on everybody against the Falcons. I really hope David Johnson plays because I would love to. The optimal lineup construction is Murray and Johnson in the same lineup together, monopolize all possible
stack.
Yeah. Stack them together. But most people think of stacking, if we're doing like DFS 101, most people think of stacking as like wide receiver, tight end with the quarterback. No, you can actually stack the running, especially a guy who's involved in the receiving game like Johnson. But this way you're hoarding all of these touchdowns together. And then you just kind of have to decide if you're going to run it back with someone like Julio Jones or Austin Hooper on the other side. Maybe Hooper against the Cardinals. That's a juicy way to look at it.
Chase Edmonds, we should mention because we haven't talked about him, is only $12 in Yahoo DFS and he would be the backup too. David Johnson,
who has a bad back, and as we know, anybody used to have a bad back.
Never don't have a bad back,
right?
I don't know why. I can't get it.
Shout out to Ron, one of our Yahoo cohorts that's having back surgery on Monday.
Shout out to you, Ron.
Yep.
Who's Ron?
Ron Schultz,
New York.
Oh, I
New
love York. Ron. Yeah. You know what? Ron loves you.
Yeah, no, he's coming out here this weekend for Robbie's wedding. It's gonna be great to see him. He's going through the pain.
He
he's a great guy.
Cover three,
right?
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Great human.
Yep. Ron's good people.
Mm-hmm. He is wonderful.
But he now
he's one
has
of my favorite
a bad back
in New York.
And will forever
have no idea.
A bad back. Yeah.
I'm going to send him a text.
Yep.
Maybe I'll crash at Robbie's wedding just to see Ron.
There you go.
Yeah. So you ain't never not had a bad back.
Yep.
David Johnson.
That's it.
So who's your fade? Or did you have your other?
I have the other bargain is the best running back on my 49ers, Matt Breida, for only $17. I know we talked about earlier the offensive line injuries. I think that might push a little ownership off of Breida a little bit. Tevin Coleman's actually more expensive. I think you go with Breida in this matchup.
Tevin Coleman's more expensive?
By a dollar.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, a dollar is something. And if you look, like I said, if you look at the Rams, they're not a great rushing defense. I think you can get over on them there. And again, the pass catching for Breida. And what could be, I don't know quite know how this game is going to go, but I think there's a scenario where it could get high scoring. And then you do want that pass catching back there. So that's my other bargain.
All right. So my bargain is Kyler Murray. And we talked about why. The matchup is fantastic. He's only $26. He gets Christian Kirk back. I think Christian Kirk will come back. I'm in agreement with Matt. Also, he gets Damir Bird back, who was looking hot over his first 2 weeks of the season, I believe, had 7 targets in back-to-back games. So I think that's just another weapon for Murray. And he is coming off his first win. So that is why I like him for $26. Matt's idea about stacking, fantastic. I don't know if it's going to happen with David Johnson. What about your fade?
Our fate is in the same game. I have Michael Thomas on the Saints, and not that I think Thomas is going to have a bad game, but just when you're like constructing lineups this week and you're looking at like wide receivers to pay up for, Thomas wasn't one of the ones that I came with. You've got DeAndre Hopkins at the same price, $33. Same with Julio Jones, who is questionable, but Julio Jones, you know,
dealing with a hip injury, but he's played through pain before.
Yeah, missed practice on Wednesday, whatever. I think he could really go off in this game. So Thomas, to me, looks the least appealing, especially if Jalen Ramsey and that bad back actually goes out there and suits up this week.
I dig it. And also, he's coming off such a big game that I think, you know, his price is inflated.
Also sharp, Liz.
So mine is Leonard Fournette, who I own and have been an advocate for. And we talked about his monstrous amount of volume. I mean, 29 carries and 8 of them in the red zone in week 4, 23, 4 of them in the red zone in week 5. Still only one touchdown despite 12 red zone carries over 2 weeks. But still, he's putting up a ton of yardage. And then I look at the Saints. And the Saints, if you look at overall in the season, they got smacked the first couple of weeks of the season. But over the past couple of contests, that run defense and defense overall has really found a backbone. They've stiffened a ton, much more impressive. And I think, I mean, you know, fine, the matchup against Tampa Bay, they didn't really give up anything. But it's Tampa Bay's backfield. Enough said. They also kept Ezekiel Elliott rather quiet. Yes, he scored a touchdown, but 35 yards? I mean, come on. So when I am paying up for, when I am paying, oh gosh, what is he?
He's 25 bucks.
25. When I'm paying $25 for my running back, I want the matchup to be juicier, even if the volume is there. Again, this is DFS, not season long, but I do have Fournette for reference in redraft as my RB 14 or 15, so out of my top 12 because I have that much respect for the Saints defense.
Yeah, they've allowed 7 rushing touchdowns on the year. I think that's tied for most, but like you said, a lot of that was
early on in the season. They're not giving up the YPC.
4.5 yards per carry on the season, but last 2 weeks, yes.
So that is the trend. I love what New Orleans has been able to do. I think they're real. I actually think this weirdly, this is a little esoteric, but the Drew Brees injury and the Teddy Bridgewater under center has made this team gel. It's not just like, oh, we're going to have like our superstar quarterback do everything for us. And now they're all playing up to the moment.
Yeah, I think Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com said like, oh, I think this could be the moment where Sean Payton like really like invigorates him, you know, because him and Brees have spent all this time together. You can just kind of you put it on cruise control a little bit, you know, when you've got Brees under center. But it's like you've got to start pulling out all the stops.
That's it.
When you have the backup quarterback. And I think you've seen a lot of that, too.
Well,
counterpoint,
cheers.
Though, with the way your seasons have ended, you shouldn't have to have your main guy go out to push you.
Because you know? He's also ineffective. I actually think I said this on Cover 3 that I think that the Drew Brees situation is almost a silver lining because now we're not worried about dead arm in November.
Yeah, that's true.
He can stay rested.
Good point.
And come out
he's
weeks, like come Thanksgiving, he's fresh.
Saints win the Super Bowl this year.
Oh, don't say it.
Let's go, baby.
We'll be back on Sunday with our Week 6 recap. Follow us on Twitter @YahooFantasy. I'm @LizLoza_FF. That is @MattHarmon_BYB. And we are out.